William Ruto prepares to take office as Kenya's next president after the country's highest court affirms his election victory and blasts his opponents' accusations of vote rigging. We'll look at how the East African nation now moves forward. Also, we put Zambia's landmark debt relief deal with the International Monetary Fund under the spotlight. Is $1.3 billion enough to turn around the country's ailing economy and the lives of its people? We'll discuss why some are celebrating the loan and why others are against it. We'll hear from the IMF. We'll bring you expert analysis and get reaction from inside Zambia. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello and welcome to the new 30-minute format of Straight Talk Africa. I'm Heidi Adams. Thank you so much for joining me. The path is now clear for William Ruto to become the next president of Kenya. The East African nation has been stuck in neutral since the August 9th elections. Ruto's main rival, Raila Odinga, filed a lawsuit claiming the process was rigged. But this week, the country's Supreme Court settled the matter once and for all. Here's Mohammed Yusuf.
Kenya's Supreme Court on Monday upheld the election victory of President-elect William Ruto. The court dismissed Raila Odinga's claim the election was rigged in favor of Ruto and the Electoral Commission did not follow the Constitution and the electoral law.
They have done their part and they have given out their rules, their rulings. So what I can say that all Kenyans, let us go back to the normal works and let us maintain peace. Love one another because we are the brother's keeper.
The process has taken its course. People have taken their time to vote, and those who are not contented have taken their time to go there. And also, the Supreme Court has done its job the way it's expected, and I think Kenyans, we appreciate that. And I'm also happy that you see Nairobi is quiet, silent. Everybody is moving on with their lives. Personally, I want us to move on with our lives because that's the main point of democracy. In any election, there must be a winner and a loser. At the end of the day, whoever wins is our president. As Kenyans, we're okay. Personally, I'm okay with whoever wins, yeah.
Me, for the new government, I think His Excellency William Ruto, I think will make a good government. Because now, our concern is if we get a Christian president, maybe things can change from worse to better.
The Supreme Court judges unanimously said they found no significant irregularities or illegalities warrant nullification. President-elect William Ruto will be sworn in next week and he will be the Kenya's fifth president. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Well, William Ruto now has the task of uniting the country as he prepares to take office. For more on the atmosphere in Kenya and what's next for the East African nation, I'm joined by our correspondent, Mohammed Yusuf, who joins us from the VOA Bureau in Nairobi. Mohammed, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Well, from your reporting here, we can clearly get the sense that there is some sort of acceptance within the country. Is that the general feeling amongst most people? And what about those in the upper echelons of power, especially those who are opposed to Ruto's campaign? Does everybody accept the court ruling and is the country ready to move on?
Generally, from what we observed the day the Supreme Court on Monday, when they gave their verdicts about the election, and that has brought the electoral process to an end by dismissing the petition, there's been calm across the country, even in areas where we have witnessed, country has witnessed violence. It's been really calm, and generally that has been the situation. People describe Kenyans now, people who have matured politically, and at the same time, people are willing to accept rulings within institutions like the Supreme Court, and people are willing to build will on these institutions to move the country forward. This is, has not been the case in the last elections. But this time round, there's that maturity. But also from the opposition, in particular, Raila Odinga himself, he was really clear on his statement. He accepts the ruling, but he doesn't agree with so far what the judges have found out, of course, dismissing the petition. So far, he said that, of course, this is not the end of the opposition, and this inspires them to do more, to redouble the country's effort to have Kenya, to make Kenya a better democracy. And that is, of course, a welcome move. That this sort of helps the country also move forward and build the institutions and improve also its elections as time progresses. So far, that has been what the observation has been. And next tomorrow, of course, the parliament will convene, new members of parliament will be sworn in, and there then will they will elect a new speaker. And that now officially kicks off the government now mandating in 5 years to come.
Well, Mohammed, thank you so much for giving us that update. We're going to look and see how things pan out ahead of William Ruto swearing in. Thank you so much for your time. That was Mohammed Yusuf speaking to me there from Nairobi, Kenya. Now, a programming reminder for you. As of this week, Straight Talk Africa will be coming to you in a new 30-minute format. We are no longer an hour-long show. We're working to make this program more accessible on television, radio, and online throughout the African continent. But we do have much more ahead for you here after the break. We're going to look at Zambia's government's landmark $1.3 billion loan from the IMF. The government says it will unlock much-needed cash to revive and rebuild the economy. But is it a good deal for Zambian citizens? We'll break it down for you when we come back. Stay with us.
The luxury fashion brands Louis Vuitton, Valentino, Marc Jacobs, and more recently Christian Dior and Hermes are high-end fashion powerhouses that have drawn some of their inspiration from Africa's flavorful culture and fashion. But is Africa being given enough credit for its fashion innovation? This week, we're bringing you the most authentic fashions from the continent. Plus, we'll explain how African designers are striving to bring their culture on the international stage. Join us each week right here on Our Voices.
You're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. It is a landmark loan that has made international headlines. The International Monetary Fund will give Zambia $1.3 billion to help that country restructure its debt and bring about economic stability and growth. Zambia, as you know, has racked up a huge chunk of foreign debt over the past 10 years. It owes about $17 billion to external creditors. $6 billion of that is owed just to China. Now, last year, Zambia became the first African country to default on its debts in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, which, of course, has hit economic output around the world. Zambia is Africa's second largest copper producer, but during the pandemic, the price of copper dropped drastically, putting strain on Zambia's finances and its ability to service its debts. For months now, that country has been in high-stakes negotiations with the International Monetary Fund to secure this so-called extended credit facility. Let's examine some of what's been agreed to here. We're going to pull up a graphic here for you. Meant to re-establish the country's debt sustainability. And of course, that means, and we're going to discuss a little bit more of that later, it will also help make room in the country's budget for much needed social spending. And the goal is for Zambian authorities to improve the way they manage public funds, strengthen governance, and reduce the risk of corruption. Now, speaking at a press conference in Lusaka last week, Zambia's finance minister, Situmbeko Musokotwane, said Zambians can expect their lives to only get better as a result and not worse.
I know for most young people out there, they want a more direct benefit. The more direct benefit for them is a job, being available to earn a salary. What we've achieved so far creates a good platform for us now to push very hard for the investments to be undertaken, for the jobs to be created, so that in the next 10 years, the quality of life of the average Zambian will certainly be much better than what it is today. Every year, you should see improvement in the quality of your lives.
So is the $1.3 billion loan really enough to help turn around Zambia's economy and the lives of its people? And is there a roadmap here for other African countries to follow? Well, to help us understand it all, I'm joined here in studio by Alison Holland. She is the IMF's mission chief for Zambia. And in Cape Town, South Africa, is Mundia Kabinga. He's an emerging markets lecturer at the University of Cape Town's Graduate School of Business. Mundia and Alison, welcome so very much to Straight Talk Africa. Thank you for being with me. And Alison, I'm going to start with you. We've seen this being referred to as an extended credit facility, a loan, a debt relief deal. But is this a bailout?
So thank you very much, Heidi, for having me on today. So yes, as you said, this is a $1.3 billion loan that the IMF is providing to Zambia. It is being provided on very concessional terms, so this is very cheap financing. Zambia will not have to pay any interest rate on this loan, and it will have between 5 and 10 years to repay the loan. So this is a really good deal for Zambia. Importantly, as in connection with this loan, it will not just provide financing from the IMF, it will also help unlock financing from other partners, including from the World Bank, which will also provide some critical financing to the government. But a key element to this is that under this program, the authorities will be able to take some steps to reduce, to undertake some fiscal adjustment to restore fiscal sustainability and, as you said, debt sustainability. So this will support the authorities' request to creditors to provide a debt restructuring and the significant debt relief that it's needed to improve the outlook going forward.
Alison, why 1.3 billion? I mean, why not 3 billion? Or why not a figure that's much closer to what Zambia owes, that 17 billion to other creditors? Why this number?
So as you can imagine, you know, the fund's resources are limited, and we need to make sure that we have adequate resources to support all our members. That said, when we take into account the balance of payments outlook for that Zambia is looking at, when we take into account the likely path of exports, the likely path of imports, and the goals for reserves accumulation. So we do, under this program, want to see Zambia build their international reserves so that they can provide more stability going forward. When we take all of that into account, and we take into account what we see as what is needed from creditors, then the IMF will fill that the remaining gap with the $1.3 billion.
Mundia, I want to come to you. We saw France and China agree to a so-called haircut, which means they're willing to forgo some of their loan repayments from Zambia. But can you explain for us, how did Zambia get into so much debt in the first place? And how do you see this government paying the IMF back in 10 years, is it?
Okay, so thank you very much for that, Heidi. And I guess as an entry point into the conversation, I think it's useful to basically consider that there are two factors that explain why Zambia finds itself in the position that it is in currently. The first basically is a combination of internal factors as well as some external factors. So in relation to the previous fund program, that basically resulted in the debt cancellation. So many African countries like Zambia found itself in a position where it had relatively very low debt levels after the last round of debt forgiveness. And that basically made it very, very attractive to many foreign investors to basically provide some financing to Zambia. And this is a combination of Eurobond holders as well as China through the project finance, both on a bilateral level as well as through its commercial arms, like the Import and Export Bank of China, as well as the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, which basically own a significant part of that $6 billion that you basically introduced earlier. Further to that, we also see that many African countries were going through this cycle of issuing sovereign debt because of those relatively low debt levels. And then secondly, what we also see is that there was a huge appetite for commercial financing, which is not attached to any strict conditionalities, as had been the case with IMF and World Bank funding before. So that combined with the very populist agenda that was basically pursued by the previous administration, it basically led to, you know, to the situation that we found ourselves last year. So that combined with a very ambitious and poorly sequenced infrastructure development program, a combination of economic shocks that were precipitated by climate change as well as COVID, as well as a number of very poor economic decisions, is what resulted in the extremely high levels of debt and the default that we experienced last year.
I want both of you to just watch along with me. We spoke to average Zambians, and we asked them how they feel about this loan. Here's a look at what they had to say.
We are extremely excited by the news that the IMF has finally approved our $1.3 billion package.
We as leadership movement do not believe that IMF bailout will be a solution to this country.
I think it's a good deal.
It means that that money will help me to become another entrepreneur.
The IMF package bailout is going to improve the lives of Zambian people.
This is going to improve the quality of life of Zambians because a fiscal space will be created within our budget, because if you see domestic revenue, 75% of it has been going towards debt servicing. So when our debt is restructured, it will be put in a sustainable level whereby government will create fiscal space in order to increase the social spending. This will be able to reduce poverty within our rural part of our country, because more money will be loosened and the government will be able to sponsor our homegrown solutions so that we can improve as a country.
We have learned from the past. The likes of Kenneth Kaunda went into IMF. It did not work out. The likes of Frederick Chiluba did that. He tried, it didn't work out. All the past presidents have tried and it doesn't work out. Not even one country in this world has developed as a result of IMF. So we think that local solution is the only emancipation to the Zambian people. We need to ensure that we find solution within ourselves.
I think the money would be channeled to other sectors, and I hope it would create jobs for us youths, the women, those that are doing business. So I hope to see more recruitments, more business opportunities, and I hope to see youths being funded.
I feel like it's going to restructure the debts that we have currently. Yeah, refinancing them, you know. And I feel like more jobs will be created because, you know, we've seen from the new Don government just in a year, they've recruited teachers and health workers. They've done so far. They've done a lot so far. But that is just with our own funds, our own money. So now, what more, we've been given this bailout, this package. It's going to help us.
Well, Zambians there giving us their view on this $1.3 billion loan from the IMF. My guests are Alison Holland from the International Monetary Fund and analyst Mundia Kabenga from the University of Cape Town. Alison, what is your message to Zambians who are cautious? I mean, and even against this, when we talk about this issue of conditionalities, you know that there has been a lot of criticism against the International Monetary Fund loans that, you know, and for those who are not familiar with conditionalities, this is that a country that borrows from the IMF is expected to adjust the economic policies in order to overcome the problems that led to all this debt in the first place. Now, the criticism has been in the past that these kind of conditionalities force governments to increase taxes, to increase interest rates, to lower spending, especially on social programs. And that's where a lot of the caution comes from and the criticism and in some cases resentment. What can you tell people? What is going to be different this time? So first, let me start by emphasizing this is the authority's own economic program. This is not so much the IMF's program. And that the commitments they have made to us are very much aligned with their visions and goals as they've set out in the 8th National Development Plan, including for economic transformation and for job creation. Second, just to pick up one of the comments from the Zambians that you featured, under this program, Zambia will achieve debt sustainability. And importantly, what that means is that for every 100 kwacha that the government will collect from its people, instead of spending 60 to 70 of that on servicing its debt, it will only be spending about 14 of those kwacha on debt. And that means that there will be more resources then for critical spending on the government's priorities, including on social spending. And so here I want to highlight perhaps two or three aspects of the programme that I think will really help improve the lives of Zambians. So first, under this programme, spending on health and education will be increasing. And that will increase people's access to health and education, especially in the rural areas. It will immediately provide additional jobs. But importantly, that investment in people will actually improve productivity, the productivity of the labour force, and improve potential growth going forward. So that's really important. At the same time, the government will have sufficient resources to actually be able to deliver on its budget for the social safety net programme. So in the past, while Zambia has not been able to fully execute its planned spending on the social safety net, it's only achieved about 65% of that spending. And so far this year, the new government has actually been able to fully implement its budget on the social safety net. And that is obviously critical in supporting people and helping people out of poverty. And then together, this spending, which we call social spendings, under this programme, the government is committing to a minimum level of spending. So we see this social spending more than double, from about 0.7% of GDP in 2020 to 1.6% of GDP in 2025, which is actually, in terms of kwacha, more than a quadrupling. So it will take it from 2.5 billion kwacha to 10.5 billion kwacha. And then the other aspect I wanted to highlight that I think will also really improve the outlook for businesses in Zambia is that the authorities are committed to undertaking some reforms to strengthen public financial management. In particular, one element will address the problem of arrears. So in the past, the government has built up budget arrears where it's failed to pay its bills on time, including its bills to suppliers of goods and services. So going forward, not only will the government has the government committed to not running new arrears, it has also committed to dealing with the stock of arrears and beginning to repay those businesses in Zambia. And that will put more money into those businesses and allow them to reinvest in the future. And then against all, this has all been done in the context of a much more improved macroeconomic outlook. In particular, we are seeing inflation come down from basically a peak of almost 25% in the summer of last year to now being just below 10%. And at the same time, we've seen the impact of the announcement of the program on the exchange rate. And overall, the exchange rate has appreciated by more than 40% since the government came into power on its mandate of economic reform. And the exchange rate is now back at levels not seen since March 2020, when at the COVID-19 pandemic began.
Well, yeah, I want to pick up there. Mundia, we saw Zambia's currency surge against the US dollar just the day after this IMF deal was announced. Inside the country, I mean, we heard now, of course, the commitments that the Zambian government has made to the IMF. From your point of view and the way things work inside the country, what can you tell us, those of us who are not your learned friends, what will this loan do for the kwacha, and what will a strong kwacha do for average Zambians? Excuse me.
Okay, so thank you very much for that, Heidi. I guess the two points that I just basically would need to make in relation to the currency appreciation is just simply that, well, what we've seen is that, well, the US dollar has been strengthening in relation to other foreign currencies around the world. And what has happened is that the kwacha over the last week actually has just strengthened 4% in relation to the US dollar. So these making the Zambian kwacha perform a lot better than many other currencies around the world, and more so the United States dollar. And by implication, what this basically means is that the benefits might accrue to Zambians, particularly households, in the sense that Zambia is a small and import-dependent country, and with a very strong kwacha, it makes it much easier to import fuel, which is necessary to transport goods and services, particularly agricultural produce, across the country. And then secondly, because of a stronger kwacha, it makes it a lot easier to import foodstuffs and fertilizers from our neighboring countries. And with a country that basically has 60% poverty, particularly post-COVID, and 65% food inflation, what we basically see is stronger kwacha doing is basically reducing the imported inflation component. And that would basically translate into welfare improvements on the other side of the Zambian households. What is particularly of concern, on the other hand, is just simply with regard to exporters. So exporters now will be basically, their goods become relatively more expensive in relation to the rest of the world. And consequently, those face a significant reduction in the demand for Zambian produces in the export market. So ultimately, what this program does in the short term is to reorient the economy towards the import sectors. But of course, in the medium to long term, as importers basically expand their capacity, they will be able to export more and hence meet the financing obligations required in the medium term.
Alison, I want you to respond to what Mundia said, but I also want to just ask you very briefly about half a dozen other low-income countries are more or less in the same position as Zambia's. Can we see this debt relief deal as a sort of a pilot or test case in a new round of IMF financing, especially for African countries?
So thank you, Haiti. So many countries in the region are facing very significant policy challenges given the increase in global fuel prices and fertilizer prices and food prices. And yet at the same time, they have very limited policy space. And this is all at a time when the region is trying to recover from the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, the fund has been able to help many countries in the region. I think since 2020, we have extended financial assistance to 39 countries to the extent of $26 billion. And then, of course, the SDR allocation that was made in 2021 has benefited all our members and has basically provided $23 billion to the countries in the region. That said, the fund is hindered in its ability to provide support to some countries where debt is assessed to be unsustainable. And Zambia was in just that position itself. And so what was critical for us to be able to extend the support to Zambia was the support from its international creditors, especially within the context of the G20 Common Framework. So it was their commitment to and their willingness to provide debt relief to Zambia to help restore that debt sustainability that actually has allowed us to present the Zambia's program to the board and get it approved. And so a successful implementation of this debt restructuring would, I think, offer a great deal of hope to other countries, other low-income countries facing these debt challenges, and provide that way forward.
Well, speaking of the way forward, we have to end this conversation here. But Mundia and Alison, to both of you, I'd like to invite you on again in future because we're going to keep an eye on how things progress and we'd like to hear from you again in future. Thank you so much, Alison Holland from the IMF and Mundia Kabenga. Thank you so much from the University of Cape Town there. I appreciate your time. And that is our show this week. Straight Talk Africa, remember, is now a 30-minute show. So we look forward to you joining us on television, radio and online. You can also catch us and follow us, Straight Talk Africa, on social media. Thank you to our affiliates carrying our show across the African continent, and thank you to you for always watching and always listening. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.